I'm very happy now to welcome to the program Linda Siegel, and she is with us with the legislative wrap-up. We do the legislative update during the 60 and 30-day legislative sessions, and we did that. And now let's look back on the session. The time for vetoes has come and gone. Vetoes have been made. Bills have been passed. Give us an overview of the 30-day New Mexico legislative session.
Well, thank you, Mary Charlotte. Glad to be here to talk about this very exciting 30-day session. To remind everybody, we had about 1,000 bills, memorials, constitutional amendments introduced. And, of course, this is a 30-day session that's just required to be for the budget. But a lot of governors let other issues come on to the call, and so there were many, many things that legislators wanted to discuss. And if the governor had given a message even remotely related to that topic, bills got introduced, and that's why we've had so many. But the very interesting thing is that out of these 1,000-plus bills and memorials, only 77 actual bills passed, which is the lowest number in a 30-day session in since 1976.
Really?
And that's fascinating. Now, not that passing a lot of bills is necessarily a good thing, because we seem to pass a lot of bills that aren't so good, but to only have 77 actually pass both chambers is unusual, to say the least.
To what do you attribute that?
I think partly because it was a 30-day session that is preceding the election, and people are really already out there deciding what they're going to do in their campaigns, and this is likely to be quite a partisan, perhaps very contentious election coming up. And I think that that just sort of put a pallor over it, and a lot of people just didn't want to pass very many bills.
So they were afraid that it would be used against them if they took a stand on something?
Well, we pretty much know that there will be a lot of that happening in the session, where Democrats will use things that Republicans said in the legislature and vice versa. And we know that the governor was taping a lot of the hearings, and perhaps some of those tapes will appear in campaign messages.
Videotapes?
Videotapes, right.
Did the Democrats ever get their stuff together to actually do any of their own taping?
I did not see any Democrats doing any tapings of hearings.
Anyway, okay. So shall we talk about the budget itself?
Right, which was the most important thing that the legislature passed.
And which is what the 30-day session is about.
Indeed. The budget did pass, a $5.6 billion budget, which is not anywhere near the 2007 budget high, where we had about a $6.2 billion budget. We did have an increase this year in revenues, so the legislature appropriated another $200 million or so to go to different programs. So this was an increase from last year's budget, which was around $5.4 billion, and a lot of programs that had been cut over the last 3 years got some funding put back in. Education had $89 million go back in. Medicaid had another $38 million allocated, and then a number of the safety net programs, domestic violence, child care, sexual assault, those kinds of programs got little increases, but nothing that brought any of them back to their pre-2007 levels.
Which is, okay, that's where they were in 2007, and one might make the argument that they weren't exactly overfunded at that point.
Absolutely not. Many, particularly the social services and health care programs.
Now, one of our themes for today is vetoes. Were there any budget vetoes?
Well, there were actually very few, which is kind of unusual. The best I could tell, I went through the budget, it looked like there was only about $2 million of vetoes out of about a $5.6 billion budget. Some interesting ones in Santa Fe. Women's Health Services had a $50,000 appropriation to help them. That was vetoed. And a program at the Linzig Theater for youth in theater for $100,000, that was vetoed. And obviously there were other small projects vetoed totaling about $2 million.
So what was that all about?
Oh, I don't know. Who can know? The governor doesn't have to give messages when they veto line items in the budget. Now, the bills that we'll talk about in a few minutes that were vetoed, the governor always gives a message about why she vetoed certain things.
And that's required?
It's customary. I don't know if it's required, but
okay. But
usually they give a veto message explaining why.
Well, let's talk about some of the bills that were passed. Of these, what's it, 77 bills?
Yes, yes. And none of them are going to make people too excited. The bill that the governor really wanted was a tax pyramiding bill. In construction, people who are doing construction have to pay gross receipts tax on every level of purchase of products and services. And what this bill does, and this has been a bill of discussion for a number of years, and so it finally passed. What this bill does is does away with that pyramiding, that charging gross receipts tax at every level. And when it goes into effect fully by, I think, 2017, it will be about a $50 million hit to the coffers of the state. So it's a significant tax cut when it's fully implemented.
Give an example of what that actually looks like in real life.
Okay, so if I'm a contractor and I get a contract to build a new building at the community college, how about a higher education center at the community college? I have to pay gross receipts tax on the things, the materials that I purchase.
So you go buy some cement and some framing materials and some, okay.
Right, and then at the next level, I have to pay gross receipts tax to the people who, the subcontractors. They have to pay gross receipts tax.
So they charge you $10,000 plus 8.whatever%.
Right, right. And then anything that subcontractor buys, they have to pay gross receipts tax on. So you've got the one pot of money, let's say $10 million. Everybody you contract out to, then they have to also pay gross receipts tax on every single thing they buy, on every single service they purchase. And what this bill does is it takes it back down to paying one gross receipts tax.
And where does it get paid?
Well, it probably would get paid in the original contractor. I'm not exactly clear how it works, but only one entity would pay the gross receipts tax, and then you don't have to pay it down through or up through all those other levels.
Right.
It's probably fairer that way, but it's certainly part of the issue is that in New Mexico, we rely heavily on revenues from gross receipts tax, and we do every year. We erode those gross receipts taxes by giving tax credits and tax abatements to different groups, and pretty soon we're not going to have any gross receipts tax. And
it's easy to take them away, and it's really hard to put them back.
That's right. And John Arthur Smith this session, who's the chair of the Senate Finance Committee, did this joke bill where he said, we're just going to eliminate all gross receipts taxes in New Mexico. And the FIR, which is the fiscal impact report, was $2 billion.
Right.
So if we eliminated everything, that's how much money the state would lose out of our $5.6 billion budget. So
right. It
is significant.
Okay.
Okay, other bills that passed. One bill that St. Vincent's wanted very much was a sole community provider to allow money to come from other sources to help pay for indigent care throughout the state in all the different hospitals. So that was a positive bill. A bill changing child adoptions passed, making those more difficult for shysters so that people can't come in and say they're an adoption agency and then take people's money and then not have any children. The
Does that happen?
Yes.
People come in and they get money and then they leave the kids that they were supposed to have adopted?
Or there are no kids to be adopted. I mean, it put a lot more restrictions penalties on people who aren't following the law, however that goes. A bill attempting to deal with some of the problems with opioid overdose, a pain management bill that passed.
What does it say?
Oh, it's an existing law, and it strengthens the existing councils that are the council that's supposed to address this problem and bring all the providers together and figure out how to do regulations that can help providers make sure they're not overprescribing. And it doesn't really address the illegal activity going on in the opioid business
which
world,
which is
selling on the streets and
right,
stealing.
Isn't that where most of the overdose problem comes from?
Yeah, from stealing from retail or wholesale, from getting drugs on the internet.
Yeah,
from another country, where there seems to be no control over that. And then a bill that's important to any business was the fix of the temporary unemployment fund contributions. And because we've had such high unemployment, our unemployment fund was getting precariously low. And this bill just assured that if we have to raise that, it will be the smallest amount possible. If we have to raise the unemployment tax to fill that fund back up, that it'll be as modest as possible and only occur when the fund really goes down. So, you know, lots of bills like that, which aren't all that exciting. We did a bill to change the legislative retirement contributions to increase the amount that legislators pay into that fund. Of course, we don't pay legislators any salary, but they do have a retirement fund, which certainly I think they deserve since they work all this time for no money.
Okay, we're talking to Linda Siegel with this year's legislative wrap-up. So, bills that failed to pass, that's another category.
Yeah, and those are ones that were the most controversial in this legislative session. The fireworks ban, that bill died very early in the session.
I can't believe that.
It is kind of
with all
shocking.
Those wildfires last year.
Right, and the ban was really just to allow the governor to declare that the state was in a disaster situation and that we should stop selling fireworks. But the fireworks lobby was quite powerful, and that bill died in, I think it was the Senate Corporations Committee, and that was the end of it.
The power of lobbyists, Linda
yes,
Siegel.
Yes, the power of lobbyists. Teacher,
I found a bunch of blown fireworks in the field near where I live, and they were, a few weeks ago, they were scaring all the dogs, and I found the blown-out empty containers.
Oh, my gosh.
And I live right in the middle of Santa Fe. I mean,
wow.
There we have it.
Yep. Well, in a few months, we're really not going to want those out unless we get some more rain.
Yep.
Another hot bill was the teacher evaluation bill, and this was a piece of legislation that the governor had her bill, and then the Democrats had their version of the bill. And both of them were kind of moving along in the committees, but they could never get to the point where they merged them or made any kind of compromise. Consequently, both bills died in both the House and the Senate. So no teacher evaluation, no new teacher evaluation. There are, of course, teacher evaluation plans already in effect. The third grade promotion bill, or the no third grade promotion if you can't read bill, again, the governor's version, the Democrats' version, and the two could just not get together, and so there was no compromise. Both bills, again, in the House and the Senate, they were moving along, and then when they couldn't get any compromise, that was the end. So those bills died, too.
You know, when you were here, I made a call out to our listeners who were mathematically inclined to send me the numbers on how long it would take if you didn't promote third graders for the state to be 50% third graders.
I remember that.
And nobody sent me anything. So I did the math myself. And it turns out, oddly enough, that if half fail every year, you still don't ever get to that point. It kind of levels out to where you always have big third grade classes, but the rest of the classes kind of even out after a period of 10 years. The first year, you've got very small fourth grades everywhere.
Uh-huh, uh-huh.
But then the third grades become so big that if half of them pass, then your fourth grades are a normal size again after 10 years. So the thing that I expected actually doesn't happen.
But you will have to deal with multiple new classrooms of third graders if you implement this.
You will have big third grade classes.
Right, or many more of them. So there's room for coming to agreement on that, but didn't happen this session. Perhaps because it's 30 days. I think probably in the 60-day session that there'll be some agreement. And, of course, the one we've talked about and you've talked about a lot, the immigrant driver's license repeal bill, it did pass the House, and then it sat in the Senate, and the Senate passed its own version, which was not an outright repeal, but that made a lot stricter requirements, fingerprinting, you have to reapply every year, address verification, all kinds of things that address the fraud concern. But then the Senate bill never was heard in the House. So you had two different bills passing over to the other chambers and
so basically it goes back to what it was before, which is immigrants can get driver's licenses under the current program.
Yes.
You know, I was reading the other day in the paper, there was an article about a man back east. I think it was North Carolina, who was married. He's a Mexican guy. He was married to an American. They had three kids. They, whatever state he was, had a bill where you could get a driver's license. It was repealed.
Mm-hmm.
He was a landscaper, and he was always driving to work. He couldn't get his license renewed. He didn't have enough money to apply for citizenship, and that, because it's a very lengthy and very expensive thing. So he hadn't done that yet. And not only was he deported from the United States, but he, as it stands now, has lost all parental rights. His wife is mentally ill, can't take care of the kids. The kids were taken away and put into foster care.
Oh, my God.
And are being raised by strangers. And we all know the horror stories that come out of foster care. Not that these kids will necessarily live that, but this man who is a completely fit father, whose mm-hmm. only crime, and it's not even a crime, whose only violation was that his driver's license expired and he didn't have the proper documents, is in Mexico, ready to receive his own three small children, and the United States won't give them to him.
Wow.
And this is the kind of breaking up of families that comes about when you start doing things like the repeal, ladies
Absolutely.
And gentlemen.
Yes. Okay, on to the next bill, the ERB, the Education Retirement Board fix, which because the public school and higher education retirement fund has not enough money in it to pay everything out, they've got to make some fixes. And this was there were several bills addressing that. There was one that the House passed, and it went over to the Senate and didn't get out of there. So we're going another year without fixing the education retirement problem. Spaceport liability, people probably heard a lot about that. The businesses at the spaceport wanted the state to eliminate them from any liability. And a bill was introduced to do that. And, of course, it was killed immediately in the Senate Judiciary Committee. And the governor's office is very concerned about that. And then the final one, which got a lot of publicity, was the land-grant permanent fund for education and for early education. And that bill failed in the House Education Committee, and then the Senate version never got out of the Senate. So those were some of the prominent ones that failed.
Right.
And never got to the governor.
Now let's talk about bills that were passed and then were vetoed by the governor.
Yes, and there were 14, I think, of those. But the ones that are the most controversial, probably, the one that is the most controversial that she vetoed was Senate Bill 9, which was the corporate income tax that Senator Peter Wirth has been working on for 8 or 9 years now. And this version of the bill lowered the corporate income tax by half a percentage point for everybody and required that combined reporting that we talk about for the larger corporations. And of course his messaging has been that we treat big corporations from out of state much better than we treat our local New Mexico corporations in the income tax arena. And he's been trying to equalize that for years.
Well, so if you are Walmart, you pay lower taxes than if you are a mom-and-pop shop selling the same stuff.
Percentage-wise, yes.
Yeah.
So that bill was vetoed, and the governor's message on that was that, oh, it was unfair to these large corporations and that people would be laid off and companies, grocery stores, clothing stores, all would start charging more money to consumers, and that would have an adverse effect on New Mexicans and all that.
Well,
all those reasons.
Yeah, a lot of outcry about that. Any other vetoed bills you want to mention?
Well, an interesting one was the increase for county salaries, and that would have any county elected official, county commissioners, treasurer, clerk, they would have gotten an increase. She vetoed that. And a bill that would, a criminal expungement bill, and what that bill did was if somebody stole your identity and then they went out and committed crimes with your identity, the police are going to come after you and you're probably going to get arrested. And then you have to say, well, wait, that wasn't me, my identity was stolen. But your arrest is still going to stay on your record, even though it wasn't you. And this bill would have helped that by removing the record of those illegitimate arrests.
And she vetoed that?
Yeah.
Why?
Yeah. Well, there were some other things in it, too, like if you had a misdemeanor and you hadn't gotten any trouble for 10 years, that would be removed. But all of her cabinet, the public
like
safety...
Like public swearing or something?
Well, that could be like a domestic violence that got pled down to a misdemeanor. It could be anything. But the public safety secretary testified against it, and part of their reasoning was, well, it will be a nightmare to figure out how our systems will address taking certain people out and leaving others in, and you know, it's bureaucratic.
Hmm.
And so people who are unfairly charged, their names will remain in the system, and some won't be able to get jobs and all that, all the bad things that happen from that.
Oh, boy.
So that was vetoed, and then a few others, but those were the more interesting ones.
Now, as we always talk about every year, there's capital outlay, and some of the capital outlay that was passed was also vetoed.
Yes, there were two, what we would call the GO bond capital outlay, which is statewide bonds that we all will have to vote on in the general election. And that was, I think, about $230 million. She did not line item veto anything there. And that's a lot of statewide projects, higher education institutions, those kinds of things. But the actual capital, the severance tax capital outlay bill, was about $150 million, I think. And she vetoed $22.9 million
oh boy,
out of that bill. And Santa Fe had $3.3 million of that. She vetoed the courthouse, the equipment, the furniture, those things that our brand new courthouse downtown is going to need.
We're going to stand.
The judges are going to be sitting on folding chairs, I guess. So the $1.2 million vetoed from that. And
why?
Then
why?
I don't know. I do not know. I think her comment on that was that the county should pay for that. And the county has said, well, we don't have any more money, so we can't pay for that. And then she vetoed things like $200,000 for the Santa Fe Farmers Market to redo one of their parts of the building. Of course, the city of Santa Fe owns the Santa Fe Farmers Market building, and this would have improved that building, enabling more economic development. And she vetoed the $200,000 for the Santa Fe Botanical Gardens to
Is she mad at Santa Fe?
It could be.
We probably didn't vote for her.
So there were quite a few, well, $3.3 million of Santa Fe things vetoed. Parking lots for the schools, a phone system for the schools, that was vetoed. Women's health services, $130,000 to improve their building, which is owned by the county, which does indigent care.
They got nailed twice.
Yeah, so they lost the capital outlay, and then they lost the some operating money. And then other counties, of course, Doñana County lost $2.6 million. Bernalillo County lost $5 million.
And so what happens? Okay, so you pass a budget, and the budget has all that money in it, and then it's vetoed. Does that mean we have a surplus of all those millions?
Yes, that means there'll be $22.9 million available in the 60-day session to add to next year's allocation.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, capital outlay, we've talked about this on the show for years. There are these differing philosophies. A lot of legislators want to be able to fund projects in their own area which have economic development impact for their area. But then a lot of governors want to have these big statewide projects. Like $30 million of this capital outlay went for the Big Eye in Albuquerque. Well, absolutely they need that. But we also, a lot of us think we need the local projects to help our local communities and to help the businesses and programs and wherever we live.
Now, there are some bills that were passed or whatever these things are called that result in not being signed or vetoed or whatever, but rather in being put on the ballot as constitutional amendments.
Yes, constitutional amendments. And there were four of those that actually passed. Three of them had to do with the PRC.
Yes.
So the first
one.
The Public Regulation Commission. Yes, Public Regulation Committee, which has been in the news so much in the last years.
Right.
Not just with our own local commissioner being indicted and convicted, but others that have served in the Public Regulation Commission. And so one of the first constitutional amendment that will be on the ballot is creating some qualifications, some educational qualifications for anyone who wants to run for the PRC. And we do this in other areas, like the Attorney General has to be an attorney. The Treasurer, I think, has to have, you know,
some kind of accounting background.
So it's not that unusual. The putting the corporations part, you know, if you're a for-profit or non-profit corporation, you have to register and file with the state corporations, which is in the PRC, moving that to the Secretary of State's office. And then the third one, the Superintendent of Insurance is in the PRC, and that's been a political football, that position, with different people being appointed depending on who the PRC commissioners are. And that would be appointed by an outside commission if this constitutional amendment were to pass. And then the fourth one was one that I've never thought of before, but creating an independent public defender. Right now, the public defender, the director of the public defender office, is appointed by the governor. And this would allow a commission made up of different people to appoint the public defender.
And what's behind that?
The feeling that the public defender's office was not getting full funding, didn't have an independent advocate that could go to the legislature, that it was totally controlled by whomever the governor is. So this would make that independent. And so those four constitutional amendments will be on the ballot. Plus, there were some constitutional amendments from last session, which will be on the general election ballot. It's really important for people to look at those constitutional amendments before they go to vote, because it will just have a few words describing it, and if you haven't looked at it beforehand, you're not going to know what those amendments are really about.
Maybe we'll talk about them on this show.
Yes, let's do that before the election.
Before the election.
Yes.
So we've got just about 2 minutes left.
There's one other important thing to mention.
Okay.
The Senate confirms all the department secretaries. And every secretary that the governor has appointed has been confirmed by the Senate except one. And that's the Education Secretary, Hannah Scandera. And this time she didn't get a confirmation hearing. So she is still an acting secretary without confirmation. Of course, she could be acting for the next 2 years.
Right. So there's a primary election coming up in June. What's at stake? What will we be voting for then?
Well, this this legislative session, as I said earlier, was really all about this election coming up. And there are a lot of empty seats with retiring senators and retiring House members. Also, the redistricting created about 10 new swing districts, districts that can go either Democrat or Republican. That means that these are going to be very contentious and interesting elections coming up. And so it's really important for people, whether you're a Democrat or a Republican, to...
Or something else.
Or, well, if you're an independent or a Green, you have no primary election, and we don't have crossovers. So, but if you're one of the, quote, major parties, then get involved in your primary election, because a lot of seats are decided in the primary, and with seats opened up because incumbents like Representative Ben Lujan is retiring, so that seat is open in the Democratic primary.
And Mayor Cobbs is running
and
for that
he
seat.
He is, and there's someone else running in that seat, and there may be more people running in that seat. So that's a seat that will be determined by the primary election. So if you want to have a voice in who your representative is or your senator and the elections in the primary, get out there and vote. And our turnouts are notoriously low.
I know.
We don't have a presidential fight in the Democratic Party. They do in the Republican Party. So a lot of people don't go out and vote in the primary unless there's a presidential candidate. But these House and Senate seats are really important.
Linda Siegel is with us during every legislative session doing the legislative update, and this has been the legislative wrap-up. So maybe we'll see you a little before the primary in June.
Yeah, let's talk a little bit about that.
Excellent. Linda Siegel, thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you, Mary Charlotte.